It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
More Nigerian schoolgirls abducted. Nigeria accepts U.S. help in the fight against Boko Haram. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Residents of the northern Nigerian village of Warabi say Boko Haram Islamist militants on Sunday kidnapped 8 more girls. The group Monday claimed responsibility for abducting more than 300 last month from a school in northeast Borno State. Some escaped, but 276 remain missing. President Obama Tuesday said the United States has offered Nigeria assistance. Reuben Abadi is a Nigerian presidential spokesman.
The offer from President Barack Obama, which was conveyed to President Jonathan by the United States Secretary of State, Mr. John Kerry, in a telephone conversation which began around 3:20 p.m. today, includes the deployment of U.S. security personnel and assets to work with their Nigerian counterparts in the search and rescue operation. Mr. Kerry assured President Jonathan that the United States is wholly committed to giving Nigeria all required support and assistance to save the abducted girls and bring the reign of terror unleashed on parts of the country by Boko Haram to an end.
Some Nigerians have accused their government of not doing enough to free the girls. Demonstrators outside Nigeria's consulate in New York voiced their concerns Tuesday. Among them, Joseph Jayola, president of the United Nigerian Association of New Jersey.
That is not acceptable by any measure. In the entire world, it should not be acceptable. There is terrorists in Nigeria. It should be taken care of. The head of state should be held responsible for what is going on in that country. It's not that they don't know who they are or they don't know who finances them. They know all about it. So we are asking the head of state, Jonathan Lookman, to step up the fight and get hold of these people and eliminate them. How can only few hundred people take over the whole country?
A spokesman for UN Rights Chief Navi Pillay said Boko Haram fighters could face charges of crimes against humanity if they carry out the threat to sell the kidnapped girls. The United States Tuesday announced its first sanctions against South Sudanese. Secretary of State Kerry announcing financial penalties against Mariel Chan Wong, a government military commander, and Peter Gadet, a military leader loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The sanctions freeze assets the two men have in the United States and bar U.S. citizens and companies from doing business with them. Earlier, U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon met President Salva Kiir in Juba, who pledged to seek peace with rival Mr. Bashir.
I have assured His Excellency that I'm ready now to travel to Addis Ababa to go and meet Riek Machar, if he will accept to meet me. So I will meet him in Addis, and we are going to talk about how to stop fighting so that people go back home. This is the month of May, and everybody knows that this is the time the rains come in our country. Everybody runs to his or her field to sow something so that when the harvest time comes, you have something to harvest.
Mr. Machar remains in hiding as fighting between the two sides continues. The United Nations says warlord Joseph Kony and some of his Lord's Resistance Army are hiding in Sudanese-controlled areas of a disputed enclave in South Sudan. Kony has been indicted for war crimes by the International Criminal Court and has been on the run since 2005. South Africans are voting today in the nation's fifth truly democratic ballot since 1994. As VOA's Anita Powell reports, all signs point to a solid win by the ruling ANC, despite growing public dissatisfaction with the state of public services and corruption.
Some eligible voters say they are disgusted by the wave of corruption allegations that has washed over African National Congress leader, President Jacob Zuma. Others say they are disappointed that the ruling ANC has failed to extend basic services, like clean water and electricity, to all South Africans, and that the gap remains too wide between the haves and the have-nots. Perhaps with this in mind, Mr. Zuma's call to South Africans days before the election was not for them to support him. It was for them to vote, period.
I would like to use this opportunity, really, to say on Wednesday, everybody should come out and vote.
Results are expected May 10th, and local pollsters have predicted the ANC will win with 63% of the vote. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Central African Republic, interim president Catherine Samba-Panza Tuesday vowed to overhaul her government, make it more representative, as it has come under criticism for not doing more to quell sectarian violence. Marking her first 100 days in office, Ms. Samba-Panza pledged to shuffle the government so it is more inclusive and representative. Anti-Balaka Christian militia forces say they have not been given any part in the interim government. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. More can be found at our internet website, voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africans are voting today in presidential and provincial elections.
We are hoping that the voter turnout will be from 70% upwards. We are hoping that South Africans will come out in their numbers and then use the occasion as well to celebrate 20 years of democracy.
Kate Bapela is the spokesperson for the South African Independent Electoral Commission. The U.S. imposes sanctions on the military leaders of South Sudan and rebels. A spokesman says the rebels have always been interested in bringing about peace in South Sudan. And the United States offers help in the search for kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls.
We remain deeply concerned about the welfare of these young girls, and we want to provide whatever assistance is possible in order to help for their safe return to their families.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Nigeria's president says Boko Haram terror will not stop the country's progress. An Egyptian court has banned more Muslim Brotherhood politicians from partaking in future elections. And maternal deaths have been cut nearly in half since 1990. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Africa's Independent Electoral Commission says it fully prepared to administer the national and provincial elections today, Wednesday. South Africans abroad were for the first time able to vote at the over 100 embassies in the respective countries. Kate Bapela, spokesperson for the Independent Electoral Commission, tells reporter Peter Clotty that election officials have been properly trained to administer the vote.
The organization, the IEC, is ready for the 2014 national and provincial elections. South Africans who are casting their ballots in 116 missions overseas have completed the casting of their ballots. And then so we're happy with the progress. Already most of the ballot papers are coming back to the country to be counted with the rest of the election, the ballot papers that will be casted on the 7th of May. So all in all, we're looking from a readiness point of view. We're looking good. And we began special voting in South Africa.
Talking about logistical arrangements, how ready is the Electoral Commission in that directive?
No, we're extremely ready because by the time we get to the National Results Operations Center, it's a clear signal that we're ready to proceed with elections. Our officials have been trained to ensure that they give South Africans a professional service. Also, our technology is ready, the results system is ready, waiting to upload results that will be coming from voting stations across the country. You're looking at if polls are closing at 9 o'clock in South Africa, 9 p.m. on Wednesday, 7 May 2014, already by 8 hours of May, which is the 8th of May, the first voting stations will start to be uploading their results. So already by Thursday, midday, afternoon, already a whole lot of voting stations will be posting their results. So we're looking forward to that moment as we celebrate 20 years of electoral democracy as a country.
How long do you think it will take for South Africans to know the results of the election after the compilation at the National Center?
What the law says, Peter, is that the Electoral Commission cannot announce the results of the elections in 48 hours. And also the law says that we must announce the results within 7 days of the poll. So therefore, we're thinking that around Friday, most of the results shall have come in. And if all goes well, we might be releasing the results over the coming weekend. So all of this will depend on the ability of officials to upload the results and also to ensure that everything is in running order. So we're hoping that by the weekend, all results shall have been uploaded. So possibly going to the weekend of the 10th, we might be releasing the election results.
What percentage of expectations is the Electoral Commission anticipating about the turnout of prospective voters who will participate in the national and provincial elections on Wednesday?
We are hoping that we'll have no less than 20%. So our expectation is that the voter turnout will be from 70% upwards. We're hoping that South Africans will come out in their numbers and then use the occasion as well to celebrate 20 years of democracy.
Kate Bapela is the spokesperson for South Africa's Independent Electoral Commission. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Pretoria. U.S. intelligence officials are going to Nigeria to help in the search for nearly 300 schoolgirls abducted last month by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. As VOA State Department correspondent Cass Stearns reports, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry discussed the coordinated approach on Tuesday with Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan.
Secretary Kerry says the United States and Nigeria are moving immediately to establish a task group of U.S. officials at the embassy in Abuja who can help provide expertise on intelligence, investigations, and hostage negotiations, as well as information sharing and victim assistance.
We remain deeply concerned about the welfare of these young girls, and we want to provide whatever assistance is possible in order to help for their safe return to their families.
Secretary Kerry spoke to reporters at the State Department following talks with European Union Foreign Policy Chief Cathy Ashton, who called the abducted young women Nigeria's future.
They are teachers, dancers, politicians, they are scientists, they are mothers, they are women in the making who have a right to play their full part in their society, and what has happened to them is devastating for all of us. And we must do, like you, everything possible to try and reunite them with their families and to prevent this ever happening again.
Asked why the United States did not move more quickly to aid in the search for these young women who were abducted April 14th, Kerry said the administration has been engaged from the beginning and implied that it met some initial resistance from the Jonathan government.
The government had its own set of strategies, if you will, in the beginning. And, you know, you can offer and talk, but you can't do if a government has its own sense of how it's proceeding. I think now the complications that have arisen have convinced everybody that there needs to be a greater effort. And it will begin immediately.
Asked about U.S. satellite surveillance in the area, Kerry said it depends where they are and what they're looking at on any given day. The Obama administration last year designated Boko Haram a foreign terrorist organization. Washington says it supports a variety of programs aimed at providing positive alternatives to northern Nigerian communities most at risk of radicalization and recruitment. Scott Stearns, VOA News at the State Department.
Islamist militants have threatened to sell more than 250 girls who were kidnapped from their school in northern Nigeria last month. But Nigerian officials said despite the growing public outrage over the abduction, the World Economic Forum for Africa will open today Wednesday as planned. As Heather Murdoch reports for VOA from Abuja, President Goodluck Jonathan says terror will not stop the country.
Shouting on this video is a man that appears to be Abubakar Shekau, the man who says he leads Islamist insurgents known as Boko Haram. He carries a machine gun and is flanked by masked men in fatigues. In his typical maniacal fashion, he threatens to sell off the nearly 300 girls he says his group kidnapped last month, calling them his slaves. No girls appear on the video. But activists and families say the girls remain missing, and parents across Nigeria are increasingly angry. Some analysts say the video released Monday may have been timed to coincide with the World Economic Forum for Africa, an international conference that starts Wednesday and will draw more than 1,000 delegates, including many heads of state. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says Boko Haram activities will not disrupt the forum.
Terror will not stop us from work. The act of terror in Africa is diversionary, being organized by a group of people that don't want the continent to move forward. Whenever any country is showing any sign of progress, you see these criminal elements that will come up to retard the country.
But critics blame the Nigerian government for failing to stop Boko Haram. The militants have been blamed for thousands of deaths in the past 5 years. Two bombings within the past month at a bus station near the capital, Abuja, killed nearly 100 people. Boko Haram says it wants to install its harsh version of Islamic law, but Clement Nwankwo, who directs the Policy and Legal Advocacy Center in Abuja, says the violence may be partially driven by politics.
For us who are asking questions, we're asking, Did somebody set up this bomb in order to blame the opposition for it? In which case, perhaps it's not even Boko Haram. So these are questions that Nigerians are asking.
As world leaders arrive in Abuja for the Economic Forum, authorities are tightening security, preparing to virtually shut down the city for the conference. The World Economic Forum says there are security concerns, but cancellations for the event were no more than usual. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
It is Wednesday morning, May 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The United States has imposed its first sanctions on individuals on both sides of the conflict in South Sudan, where clashes between pro- and anti-government forces have left thousands of people dead since mid-December. More than 1.2 million people have been displaced by the fighting and ethnic violence. VOA's Mike Richmond reports from Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry announced the sanctions during an appearance Tuesday in Washington with EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton. He said the U.S. is imposing financial penalties on Mari Alshunong, a government military commander, and Peter Gadet, a military leader loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. Kerry said both men are responsible for perpetrating unthinkable violence against civilians.
The cessation of hostilities agreement that was signed in January by the South Sudanese government and the opposition has obviously not been upheld. And the recent attacks by the South Sudanese government and the anti-government forces, both of them, are absolutely unacceptable, and the United States condemns them in the strongest terms.
Kerry said the United States will do its best to prevent South Sudan from plunging back into the violence and despair that tore the country apart for so long.
We will continue to stand with the people of South Sudan who call for peace and who recognize that the only way to resolve this conflict is through a political dialogue.
The U.S. sanctions will freeze any assets Shunong and Gadet have in the United States. They also will bar U.S. citizens and companies from doing business with both men. Ashton said the EU also is considering sanctions against South Sudan.
I'm worried that this country is on the brink of what could be a civil war, ethnically motivated. And the prospects of famine and a humanitarian disaster, they're really looming large now. So we need to work together. We need to work to ensure that the leaders in South Sudan really do take the action that you've identified they need to.
The unrest in South Sudan stems from a power dispute between Mr. Kiir and Machar that worsened in December. The two sides agreed to a ceasefire in January, but the fighting has continued. Mike Richmond, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan rebels say they have always been interested in bringing about a peaceful resolution to the civil war that has killed thousands and displaced more than a million people. SPLM in opposition spokesman Hussein Maounyat says former Vice President Riek Machar will travel to Addis Ababa this week after receiving an invitation from Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn to meet with regional leaders and possibly President Salva Kiir of South Sudan. This comes after the United States on Tuesday announced sanctions on both government and rebel military commanders. SPLM opposition spokesman Hussein Maounyat tells me the rebels are studying the U.S. sanctions announcement.
Actually, we have not received the statement officially. We just heard it actually on the international media. When we get the full statement, we'll see actually the background and the charges against our commander, Peter Gadet. And then from there, actually, we can react officially. So far now, we have not seen it. It's just being carried on the news media. So definitely by tomorrow, when we get it officially, we can actually respond to this.
From the perspective of the SPLM in opposition, is it fair to want to impose sanctions on you?
Well, you know, when the Secretary of the State visited South Sudan and Addis Ababa here, of course, he talked about sanctions, and already we know that President Obama made an executive order that actually will sanction those who will actually be not in a position to negotiate in good faith. So far with us now, we are actually negotiating in good faith, and with the generals down in South Sudan, whatever is happening, for sure, if there are people, their names come up in the list, we need to know who are these and the charges against them, because we are in South Sudan, and for sure we need to know the background and what happened and all this, so that officially we can actually react.
What can you tell us that former Vice President Riek Machar might be meeting with President Salva Kiir? Is there truth to that story?
That's true. Dr. Machar will be coming to Addis Ababa. It's already we received the invitation from the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. And when he comes here, of course, he will have some meetings with the government here, starting from Prime Minister and some diplomats in the region. And from there, of course, President Kiir will be coming on his way to Addis Ababa. And I believe this meeting will be facilitated by the Prime Minister here in Addis Ababa. And of course, we look forward for this meeting and we'll see how it goes.
Is it possible for the two leaders to ever meet and agree on something, given what has taken place, the violence?
Well, on our part, of course, you know, we are committed to peace and we want to bring peace. If the agenda is actually that they want to discuss what happened in South Sudan and how to move the talks forward, these are things that we are very positive and we want to see how President Kiir will respond to this. Dr. Machar is always a ready person that he wants to bring peace to our country. And he will actually talk with all frankness and honesty. And definitely we hope that they will forge a way forward.
Hussein Ma Unyat is the spokesperson for the SPLN opposition. He was speaking with me from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. An Egyptian court has banned leaders of ousted President Hosni Mubarak's party from taking part in future elections, a day after presidential frontrunner Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said the Muslim Brotherhood will not exist if he wins. Elizabeth Arrett has more on Egypt's ever-shrinking political arena.
Under the ruling, officials of the National Democratic Party would be barred from running in presidential, local, or parliamentary elections set for later this year. The Egyptian Court of Urgent Matters left unclear how many former NDP members would be affected. None are running in this month's presidential vote, a two-man race that former Defense Minister Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is expected to win. The NDP was dissolved after Mubarak's ouster, but its former members nonetheless remain part of a political elite and retain considerable economic clout. The constitution adopted earlier this year did not prove any barrier to their taking part in elections. The main challenge to a Sisi presidency is the Muslim Brotherhood, the movement behind ex-President Mohamed Morsi, who Sisi helped oust last year. Sisi dismissed the Muslim Brotherhood in a televised interview Monday. Asked whether the Brotherhood would cease to exist during his presidency, Sisi said, yes, that is right. His comments appeared to dash the hopes of Egypt's remaining proponents of post-election political reconciliation. The Brotherhood had already been banned, labeled a terrorist organization, and thousands of its followers either killed or imprisoned. Smaller democratic forces have already felt the closing political sphere. Late last month, the April 6th movement, a key player in the 2011 uprising against Mubarak, was also banned. Sisi's approval rating is touted as more than 80%, with his supporters saying his strong stance offers Egypt its only hope of regaining stability. But with his only opponent in the race gaining single-digit support, analysts and opponents are asking whether political restrictions only risk a bigger backlash. Elizabeth Arrett, VOA News, Cairo.
A new study finds maternal deaths due to complications in pregnancy and childbirth have been cut nearly in half since 1990. But the World Health Organization says most countries will not meet the 2015 Millennium Development Goal of reducing maternal deaths by two-thirds. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
New UN data show 45% more mothers are surviving childbirth today than in 1990. Last year, it finds 289,000 women died from complications compared to 523,000 in 1990. A second related World Health Organization study notes the causes of maternal deaths have changed during the past 24 years. In 1990, it says women were dying of bleeding, infections, and high blood pressure in pregnancy. Now it says more than one in four maternal deaths are due to pre-existing medical conditions such as diabetes, HIV, malaria, and obesity. WHO Director of Reproductive Health and Research, Marlene Temmerman, is co-author of the study. She says the incidence of non-communicable diseases is increasing throughout the world. She adds conditions such as obesity and diabetes get worse during pregnancy and can be life-threatening. She says sub-Saharan Africa is still the riskiest region for dying of complications in pregnancy and childbirth.
If you look at what is the lifetime risk for a woman, for a girl to die during pregnancy and childbirth, then it is 1 in 40 in sub-Saharan Africa as compared to 1 in 3,500 approximately in, for example, Europe or the Western world.
The World Health Organization says steady progress in reducing maternal deaths is being made, but it says there has been too little progress in preventing adolescent pregnancies, abortions, maternal deaths, sexually transmitted infections, and HIV in the last 20 years. The study blames much of this on the lack of availability to quality comprehensive sexual education and services for young people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with volleyball. Tunisia's Africa Men's Club Volleyball Champions Esperance fought hard but lost in straight sets of 28-26, 25-18 and 25-21 to Qatar's Al Rayyan at the Men's World Club Volleyball Championships in Belo Horizonte, Brazil on Tuesday night. Earlier on, Esperance lost in straight sets to Argentina's UPCN San Juan. In football, the first Confederation of African Football, CAF, Center of Football Excellence, was commissioned in Bankomo near Yaoundé in Cameroon by CAF President Issa Hayatou and FIFA President Sepp Blatter on Tuesday. Hayatou says they have placed the ultra-modern sports facility at the disposal of Algeria, Cameroon, Ghana, Ivory Coast and Nigeria to prepare for their FIFA World Cup campaign in Brazil next month. Hayatou says other CAF football centers of excellence will be commissioned in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and Dakar, Senegal. Meanwhile, Nigerian head coach Stephen Keshi named a 30-man provisional team for Nigeria's World Cup campaign in Abuja on Tuesday. Keshi confirmed the Nigeria Football Federation gave him a free hand in selecting the squad, which will be whittled down to 23 before the African champions land in Brazil for their World Cup campaign. In athletics, South Africa's World Indoor Championship finalist Andre Olifir is aiming high in 800 meters at the IAAF Diamond League meeting in Doha, Qatar on Friday. He has set ambitious targets for this year.
I'm running in Doha the 9th of May. Rhodesia is back, so I think it's going to be pretty quick. Let's hope I can go under the 144.
So you hope sometime this year, hopefully, sub 144 can come?
Yeah, I think if we can take it step by step, let's go under 144 and then we can look for sub 143.
That was South African Andre Olifir, a World Indoor Championship finalist, speaking in Tshwane, South Africa. Finally, Dismas Indiza led David Odhiambo and Simon Ngigi in a 1-2-3 Kenyan triumph at the Burundi Open Golf Championship in the capital Bujumbura. The contest attracted entries from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, and hosts Burundi. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Wednesday morning comes from Atai Onoja of Enok in Koji State, Nigeria. He says, "Dear VOA, please convey my sympathy to the families of the innocent schoolgirls who were abducted while out to acquire knowledge. It is time to stop trading blames. All hands must be on deck to free the female students and bring their captors to justice." We thank you, Atai Onoja of Enok in Koji State, Nigeria, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That's it for this Wednesday, May 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very lovely Wednesday.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home.
Nana Kwame Sasquatch has a Timwaha. Waraka Sabrana Beju Kikima.
From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell for Music Time in Africa every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.